push this button, push that button, and then looky there. It's the news, according to me. My music didn't kick in there for some reason. Hey, good morning. It is Friday morning, and as I suspected I might be, you never know in this world where I will be. I am in Fayetteville, Arkansas, in the middle of the northwest part of Arkansas here. I am, there's not much around, but I am here. And it is later in the day than I thought it would be. I got in a little bit later than I hoped to get in last night. It was tonight I didn't get in later. I'll be in Nashville tonight, actually tomorrow morning at 1 a.m. In the meantime, I have to go through Dallas today. I leave later today. I go through, connect through Dallas and to get to Nashville. Of course, there won't be a show tomorrow. Tomorrow's Saturday. Shabbat Shalom, by the way. Quite a day tomorrow. Messing around. But most of the day, I will be in Nashville. I'll be back here in Arkansas again. Don't fear. I'll be back in Arkansas again. Tomorrow night. However, it's a glorious place. Yeah. in the meantime, I am here, and there's a few things I want to talk about. It is Friday, October 10th, 9:54 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in the Central Time Zone right now. Hopefully get this posted. It's going to be a little bit longer of a show. I think maybe about 30 minutes or so, or maybe a little bit more, just so you know. Right up front, it is still 2025, by the way, for those of you who are listening to this from centuries from now. I have, in my cup, I have some chai. I have no creamer this morning. I was going to get creamer when I went down for breakfast, and obviously I forgot to do that. So the only thing in my room here is powdered creamer. I think that the breakfast for me was supposed to be complimentary. Nobody ever asked me to pay anything, but I'm going to verify that later on. I went down, had breakfast, and I didn't pay anything, and I just left. And I'm assuming nobody ever asked me for any payment. Nobody sent me they gave me a bill, so I don't believe there was any cost to that breakfast. It was a very good breakfast. It was a buffet. It was a eggs, bacon, French toast, sausage, gravy, and biscuits, all kinds of. Side things, fruit, all kinds of, some pastries, a few pastries, muffins, potatoes, bacon, of course. No sausage, though. No sausage. Usually they have bacon and sausage. There was only French toast was very good. It was very good French toast. Anyway, onward and upward. One of the things I want to cover, say, of course, there's all the rhetoric now about what's happening in Gaza. It looks like this peace accord. This peace agreement is going to go through. We shall see what we shall see with all of this after it goes through and how everything works. I don't know for sure. I'm not a geopolitical expert here, and I'm also not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I am just simply here telling you my opinion of things and how I see them, what the news is telling me. I tried to aggregate most of the news sources from both sides. As much as possible, you cannot listen to. The leftist media. Once you take the filter off, and once your eyes are open to what they're doing and what their agenda is and what their philosophy is, their philosophical means to an end that they have, you realize that you can't really listen to them the same ever again. It's just everything changes after that. You realize that there's serious issues with everything that they believe and everything that they say. So in that respect, there is it's a very difficult thing to take them seriously on anything. They've got a few independent reporters that do a very good job. Scott Jennings does a good job. I think that, in fact, Scott Jennings is in the mouth of the tiger right there. I mean, he's doing an excellent job, but it goes to show you that when you are informed with the proper information and you have the truth and your head is screwed on straight, you can stand in the midst of a storm like that. You can stand in the midst of this chaotic hyperbolic, very rhetorical argument storm, and still come out looking like a guy who has his, you know, who's just speaking common sense. It makes it very easy to do. By the way, I have in my cup, I forgot to tell you about, in my cup, I have chai with no creamer. In my other cup, I have my backup cup, I still have peach tea. I have it in my, actually, I should put this back in the refrigerator. My peach tea that I brought from home, I brought a whole flask of it in my thermos because it was there. I decided to bring the thermos along. The thermos actually fit in my bag. I didn't realize it would fit in my bag, and it fits in my bag very well, so I brought it along. I think I might start doing that more often, just bring that bigger thermos. So I have this this backup cup here as my sweet tea. Now, there is in this area, I'm going to be later on going over and getting some Chick-fil-A later on after I have a workout, do some things. And I'll be able to, there's a Slim Chickens that's also over here. I have to say, Slim Chickens sweet tea is the one thing that they offer that Chick-fil-A does not offer. They offer a peach sweet tea. They also have a raspberry sweet tea. But the peach sweet tea at Slim Chickens, I have to say, may be a little bit better than Chick-fil-A's regular sweet tea. It is, I'd have to say it's right up there. Slim Chickens is a kind of a small franchise right now. I think it's gaining popularity, and especially around most of the southern states. I would see it actually probably, I don't know what their business model is. I know Chick-fil-A has a little bit harder time growing with regard to their expansion of stores, of availability, only because they currently have a owner-operator business model. So if you open a Chick-fil-A, they don't really like people opening more than one Chick-fil-A. So if I were an owner-operator, if I wanted to start a Chick-fil-A, basically they provide some financing. I think it costs about $100,000 to get into it. If you put up $100,000 of your money, you can start a Chick-fil-A. They will basically finance everything else. Now it's most stores' profit margin for the first year is over $1 million. So it gives you an idea of the potential there. Once you work there for a few years, you get that thing paid off. You're done with the franchise. After about 10 years, you are a millionaire. You literally could, you can live with all your expenses. And if you don't have $1 million in the bank, you've been poorly managing your money because of the kind of money that you make there. And of course, you can sell a franchise at any time. Once the store is up and running, you can walk away and sell that franchise. And of course, once it's all done, it's even worth more than you're going to get much more than your $100,000 out of it. Let's just put it that way. Just for working as a manager, you're basically managing, overseeing the business, and they train you in everything you do. It is a very good business model. If you've got $100,000 and you still want to work, and you've got 10 years to your life, I've seriously. This is something I've seriously thought about. Just put the money out there, work for 10 more years, and then walk away with buku bucks. Plus just being there, you get all kinds of company benefits in terms of employment benefits that Chick-fil-A offers through their program, health insurance, that kind of thing. So it's a kind of a win-win. But they really want the owner to be there actively working every day. They want you to put your time in every day. They don't want you just some big investor to come in and put in a bunch of Chick-fil-A's. That's just, they want you to be actively involved in your community and doing things. So it's a very, I think it's a good business model with regard to keeping people connected. However, that inhibits expansion. I don't know what Slim Chickens franchise is like. I don't think it is that way. I don't see owner operators there. They have managers, obviously, but I don't know how you do it. And anyway, I want to get into something a little bit more, how should I say this? A little bit more political, I guess, this morning. The big word, the big news is all about the Trump getting the Nobel Prize for the... Now, there's a whole lot of reasons why Trump should get the Nobel Prize. I'm not big on the whole prize thing, or the Nobel stuff. The Nobel Prize has become a joke, in my opinion. When Barack Obama was awarded the Nobel Prize for getting elected. Now, here's the backwards thinking here that I think is what really upsets me about this whole thing. Barack Obama got elected president. Within 2 weeks, he got the Nobel Prize because he was elected president. Now, who really should have gotten that Nobel Prize? Who should have gotten it? Barack Obama? Because he was black and he was a president? Who voted for him? Who put him there? Who does he represent? The American people should have gotten the Nobel Prize. It should have gone to America, the United States of America, for having voted in a... That's how it should have been done. It should not have been gone to Barack Obama. I was born this color, and then I ran for president and won. Therefore, I deserve the Nobel Prize. And then he proceeded to bomb all kinds of places, drop drone strikes on everybody and their brother, including U.S. citizens, escalated wars all over the world. You know, and most of you have never heard about any of this because the news media just let it go. They didn't care. Because Barack Obama, he's our Messiah. When government becomes your God, that's the way it works. Japan recently elected its first female prime minister. And, of course, the leftists were all thrilled about that. Oh, look how progressive they are, electing their first female. Then they find out she's incredibly conservative. She is a friend of Donald Trump. and now their heads are flying off. This is kind of like if a female conservative were ever elected to be president in this country, you would see the left, you know, freak out. Donald Trump has installed a lot of women in positions that have never been filled by women before, and you don't hear them, you know, lauding that at all. Even though that was all they were about. When we had Karine Jean-Pierre, the first, historically first, whatever. Talk about DEI. It's all about your identity as a, not your merits, not anything that you've done, not what you're qualified to do. And of course, their argument always is, well, because you were that color, you didn't have the opportunities to become qualified. So we have to qualify you for you. You can't make it on your own. You still have to get a handout, and which is, I think, demeaning and degrading. And actually, it is the bigotry of low expectations. Yes, what it is. It does nothing to help the cause, in my opinion. It's just you're just enabling it. In fact, if you look at what FDR did with the Civil Rights Act, when it was signed into position, the back behind the scenes, the whole idea, the president at the time, I think it was Johnson, whatever it was, actually believed that the providing or creating a welfare state or a welfare class would keep those people down forever because they would never move forward. It's an interesting experiment I heard about. I was reminded of it the other day. I think it was Tim Pool, I think, was on Devorah Darkins. And an interesting interview. Devorah Darkins has a very low-key, very low-energy podcast that he does. I think it was the first time he's ever done an interview with someone in studio and doing it live. Now, doing something live is a little bit harder to get the energy level because you really have to watch, there's this more, a little bit more self-conscious. There's a little bit more trepidation when you're doing something live. It tends to have a little less energy. It tends to have a little bit more, a lot of people take their recorded, I don't do this, a lot of people take their recorded podcasts and they'll clip them. I know Robert Gouveia does this. He'll clip out any spaces at all that are left. And I think he has this done by with AI or some kind of a program that they do. Somebody does this. Some kind of a program that does it for him. Even the things, the clips that he plays, the video clips, that kind of thing. He will clip it so that all of the spaces between words will be compressed, so there's not as much hesitation between. If there's any kind of hesitation, like right there, I just had a little hesitation. He would clip those out, typically, which makes it compresses the amount of information, the amount of time. Now, if you're playing it at 1.25 or 1.5 times the speed when you listen to it, it's really noticeable because it goes incredibly fast. It's like listening to a machine gun. You can usually tell it when you're listening to it at normal speed, but it does help you get more information out in a shorter period of time. Keeps your video length down, or your podcast length down. Dvorak Darkins doesn't do that. He's fairly laid back. He's fairly kind of got a calm demeanor about him. When you have somebody on like Tim Pool, who has a little higher, I would say more elevated energy level in his podcast. And of course, he had another visitor on there, Luke something Stein. I can't remember what his name, or maybe it was Brzezinski. I think it was a Polish name, possibly, or Slavic name. It was Luke somebody, and he had him on there with Tim. And the two of them would speak to each other. It kept the energy level up, and I think Dvorak could just kind of ask them questions, and they could kind of go from there. A little bit of an awkward interview starting out-wise, but that's kind of typical with a live interview, just to give you some idea. However, one of the things that they spoke about was this experiment that was done, and I can't remember the name of the experiment. The experiment was done with rats, and they had different, I think there may have been some different types of rats involved in this whole thing. But they had like a society of rats. And on the one side, the rats had to work for their food. They had to work for everything. They weren't given anything. They had to do things to get rewarded with food. They had to basically, food wasn't just there. They had to actually work for it. They had to kind of make shelter for themselves. They had to kind of fend off things. It was kind of a in terms of the cold and that kind of thing. They were given light and dark. This other society of rats was given everything that they needed, food, water, whatever they need. It's all out there all the time, as much as they needed. The experiment was very interesting. I might be able to find this. There's a name for this experiment, and you can look it up yourself. The rats became incredibly, I think I lost my connection with my mouse. There we go. This experiment, let's see what we can do here. New tab to the right. Let's just do that. How about that? We have rat experiment. Utopia, I think it was what it's called. Rat experiment. Let's go with that. Let's go here. Oh, no, that's not what I'm doing. Here we go. Rat experiment. Utopia. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Let's see what we got here. The behavioral sync. That's what it's called. Behavioral sync. I think I'm just going to go to the Wikipedia page on this. Behavioral sync is a term invented by ethologist John B. Calhoun, I guess it is, to describe a collapse in behavior that can result from overpopulation. Now, what's interesting about this is that it wasn't just overpopulation that was caused the issues here. There was much more involved in this. It was having everything provided for you that caused most of the issues. This was done between 1958 and 1962. It was a four-year experiment. Calhoun and his researchers created a series of rat utopias, including spaces where rats were given unlimited access to food, water, enabling the unfettered population growth. Calhoun coined the term behavioral sync in a February 1st, 1962 Scientific America article titled Population Density and Social Pathology. He would later perform similar experiments on mice from 1968 to 1972. Calhoun's work became used as an animal model of societal collapse, and his study has become a touchstone of urban sociology and psychology in general. Now, you could read through this part. So that's what you need to look for is behavioral sync. If you put that in a search, you can find more out about this, and the Wikipedia has an interesting thing about this. Behavioral sync, and then put in the word rats probably would give you the most popular. Now, this whole thing, the whole point was, after a while, the rats became, they would just sit there, and some of them would just sit there and groom themselves all the time. Some of them would, many female rats were unable to carry the pregnancy to full term, or to survive delivery of their litters if they did, and an even greater number, after successfully giving birth, fell short in their maternal functions. So the population growth stopped. You started having more issues with fertility rates and all kinds of other things because these rats were just basically given everything. They were living too cushy of a life. And the struggle is part of the whole thing of life. And that's how this whole thing, what the consequences were. It was a very interesting experiment. Now, of course, the other rats that were not basically just left to forage for themselves and do their own thing, they survived and thrived. However, of course, they didn't overpopulate. Their population stayed mainly stayed normal, but they were healthy. So, well, the one thing I have always felt when I am in, especially when I've been in Chicago for any length of time, you get into a big city. I probably spent more time in Chicago than any other big city. I did spend some time in San Diego, some other big cities. But I'd say Chicago probably is where I spent most of my, as far as all the time I've spent in big cities, it's been Chicago. I spent a lot of time on the Blue Line, the Red Line, downtown area. And the feeling I've always had, especially on the Blue Line, transferring to the Red Line, north on the Red Line, to get up to where there was, I had a little crash pad place there that I could stay in. And I felt like a rat in a tunnel. That's what I felt like. And the mentality was we were just all crawling from one train to the next, and everybody was trying to outpace everybody. And you didn't feel human anymore. And I can't imagine living in that situation day in and day out with all this, all the stuff that's going on. You come up out of a hole in the ground and all you hear is sirens and people, and you got people there begging you for money, and it's just one thing after another, and you start, and yet there's food everywhere. You can get free food from the soup kitchens and everything else that's out there. And of course, if you can afford to pay for food, it's really expensive. So it's just the whole thing is crazy. It's just, but that whole thing where you pile up people together like that, it does make living easier because there's more people around. You don't have to go out and grow your food. You don't have to go out and forage for food. It's just right there. It's in the store. You just go to the supermarket and get it. You don't have to go out of your way just to walk past a place when on your way. It's just one thing after another like that. I can't. And it's no wonder that we get into this situation where it just changes your psychology, changes your mentality to some degree, to a great degree. So it's just interesting that I was reminded of that. Wanted to bring that up. Not that we're rats, but I think so the psychology of what happens to us as mammals begins to be an interesting thing there. Now, I want to play this. This is courtesy of Liberal Hive Mind. This is Joaquin Jeffries and another guy. I don't know who the other guy is. Joaquin Jeffries. He goes up against someone who is a conservative who has come to this meeting, and they kind of go at it with each other. And the one thing I want you to notice is how Joaquin. His counterpoints to what this guy is asking him. He doesn't engage in the conversation about policy. All he does is engage in rhetoric has to inject Donald Trump's name into it. Has to, you know, he tries to fend off. Now, this is supposedly the best and the brightest. He's the minority leader in the House. He would be Speaker of the House today, probably, if the Democrats took back the House. He would probably be the Speaker of the House. He is a very inarticulate individual. He has a hard time speaking. When he comes out to say something forcefully, he tends to wait too long. There's too many hesitations at weird, awkward moments when he speaks, because he's trying to drink, you know, he's trying to keep his train of thought. He loses it, and he can't make a point with any kind of exclamation. There's no exclamation behind anything. It's just, now he's trying to do this, and he keeps, I want you to listen to how he talks to this guy, you know, how it comes across to me. Now, there's other people probably that think, you know, if you're a big fan of his, you probably think, oh, he's really sticking it to him. Oh, he's really pushing back on the guy. Yeah, shove it in his face. He's not saying anything. It's kind of like the whole issue of, you know, when Trump came out with the meme with his little sombrero and the mustache thing, everybody pushed back with, oh, it's a racist comment. And he came out and said, oh, you're going to say something, you can say it to my face. Now, why don't you go ahead and address the issue that's being brought up? Because that just brought down more sombreros. And it was, at that point, while it's rude, it's still funny. I'm sorry. And what makes it funny is the fact that they can't take it. You know, of course, then they push back and they try to do something to the conservatives, and they just laugh it off. They just, that was funny. That's funny. Okay, it's funny. Let's talk about the issue. Let's talk about the policy. This isn't just about feelings. We're not children here. We can be childish once in a while and then make our little comments and do our little memes with the sombreros. But let's talk about policy, because that's all it is blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of claim the racism thing, whatever. You know, I think there's a lot of fatigue when it comes to that kind of thing with the American people now. We're realizing, hey, it's not everything is racist. Now let's listen to what they have to say here. I hope this volume is okay. I own my laptop and it's not plugged directly in.
Why don't we sign off right now?
Did your boss Donald Trump?
You can easily extend the ACA right now.
Donald Trump,
he's not my boss.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not. By the way,
so let me ask you
why did you vote to shut the government down?
You know,
why did you vote to shut it down?
Let me ask you a question.
For years, you always lectured about
making,
how we need to keep the government open.
You're making a show of this to
no,
make yourself relevant.
No, it's sad. You can easily sign on to this.
You're embarrassing yourself right now.
You can sign on to this. The only embarrassment here.
Now, what he's talking about is the continuing resolution, the CR, call it the CR, continuing resolution, the clean bill, basically saying that we're gonna continue where we are with spending until we get this figured out. This would end the government shutdown. All you would have to do is vote yes for it. It's not going to change it. It's the same bill they voted on in March. Same thing that he voted for. And he's not voting for it now. So this is where we're at with it now, and this is why it's such a big deal. And they're trying to get into it. Let's continue on with what they have to say here.
You're an American.
You sign on to the bill.
Let me ask you a question.
You have four Democrats on here.
Let me ask
you
a question.
Why won't you sign on?
Let me ask you a question.
It's a clean extension for 1 year.
You voted for the one thing
clean
that we voted, correct?
I voted for a
the
tax
largest,
cut bill that gave the
largest
tax cut
to
Americans
largest,
in history, including,
largest,
by the way, the average New Yorker getting a $4,000 tax cut. Are you against that?
You're embarrassing
Do you
yourself.
Want to, right? You want to cut the standard deduction?
You're embarrassing yourself right now.
No, ripping this out. Waste, fraud, and abuse.
Voted
Tom DiNapoli, the Democratic controller of New York,
ask a question.
Pointed out that $1.2 billion you were wasted.
Listen, you're not going to talk.
He's got his finger, Hakeem has his finger now in this guy's chest.
New York
because you don't
want
to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
go
you
ahead.
Just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you
is
showed
that,
up.
Is that the way to
you
talk?
Showed up. You
just
showed
keep
up.
Your mouth shut.
So you voted for this one big
I signed on
bill.
For this. You can extend it right now.
Permanent. Extension of massive tax breaks for your billionaire.
So 90% of Americans.
So they can get a permanent extension.
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
That is so wrong.
90% of Americans take the standard deduction,
is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans all across the country.
You're
you support
here,
that?
Unfortunately,
you're against lifting the cap on salt?
Your billionaire donors.
The billionaire donors. Lifting the cap on salt, we put a income cap in.
What?
You're just here on behalf of your billionaire donors. The Democrats have more billionaire donors than any other party ever in existence. See, this is projection. This is, you know, Joaquin is where he is because of his billionaire donors. Again, this is what they do. This is exactly the only reason he's saying that is because that's what he does. That's how you go. That's how you get there from there. It's a crazy, crazy thing. My mouse has just lost connection again. But once again, folks, I just wanted to kind of get those things out there for you this morning. The left has no leadership. The left has no policy. They have no. They really have lost the plot. They have no vision for the future. They have no, really, I would say no ideological argument against anything that Trump is doing. It's just because he's Trump, and that's starting to lose a lot of its, you know, it doesn't have any more grip anymore. There's no foundation. There's no traction in that particular rhetoric anymore, in my opinion. That's why they're losing this whole thing, losing it in a big way. But here we are. We have, that's where we are today, folks. Once again, thanks for listening this week. I will be back on Monday morning, I'm hoping, hopefully fairly early Monday morning. Normal shows Monday through Wednesday and even into Thursday, I believe. We'll go on from there. Folks, have a great rest of your week. And Shabbat Shalom. We will talk to you then. Call the show, 212-379-8778. God bless. Take care. I will see you.